Hello, everyone. Happy Monday. last night I was teaching the seven steps to awakening here in the room. And what happened was, not really right in the middle of my teachings. I only had a couple minutes left, but, kind of right in the middle of my speaking, pal talk kind of poofed a little bit, and it appeared that I lost my mic to everyone else, even though I still had the mic. And so we just stopped because I only had a couple minutes left. And I promised that today I would pick up where I dropped off last night. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick up where I dropped off last night. Before I get back into that, why don't we take a few moments of silence. Amen. All right, so what I'm going to do first is I'm just going to read to you from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. I'm going to read the quote that we were looking at last night. This is a quote from Yoga Vasistha, also known as the Supreme Yoga. And the quote number in The Seven Steps to Awakening is 422, which is on page 77. Here's the quote. The mountain seen in a dream only appears to exist in time and space. It does not occupy any space, nor does it take time to appear and disappear. Even so is the case with the world. So, we often call this world a dream. And indeed it is. But in this particular quote, when the word dream is being used, he's referring to the nighttime dreams that we have when we go to sleep in our bed, right? And again, if there's a mountain that appears in our nighttime dream, even if we have to struggle trying to climb that mountain and it seems like we're slipping backwards and then eventually remember we can fly and we fly around the mountain and no matter what happens with that mountain, the mountain doesn't actually exist, the mountain in our dream. It didn't take up any space. And it doesn't take any time. It doesn't have to erode over millions of years. We just wake up and the mountain disappears because it never existed, right? So that's what this quote is about. Again, the quote says, the mountain seen in a dream only appears to exist in time and space. It does not occupy any space, nor does it take time to appear and disappear. Even so is the case with the world. And after I contemplated this quote, I was reminded of a dream that I'd had 2 days before contemplating this quote. And in the dream, what had happened was I somehow knew that there was a burglar in my house. And I went into the kitchen and I found the burglar there. And I had this inner prompt. In the dream, there was an inner prompt. To break his jaw. It wasn't coming from anger. It was like an intuitive inner voice. I'm not going to call it Holy Spirit. This was just a dream. But it felt much more like like what Holy Spirit does in real life, just this intuitive inner voice, although I wouldn't expect Holy Spirit to ever encourage me to break a jaw. Maybe it would happen, but I don't expect it. But in the dream, that's what did happen. There was this intuitive inner prompt telling me to break this guy's jaw. And my fear thought was, I can't do that. I'm not strong enough to do that. I'll fail. And the prompt came back and just told me that I could and that I needed to, and if I needed to, I could. So I grabbed a hold of them. I was able to stick my hands in the man's mouth, and I would pull upward on the upper part of the mouth and downward on the lower part of the mouth, and just pulled the mouth apart with all my strength until the jaw snapped. And then the next thing that happened was I woke up. And when I woke up, the very first thought that occurred was, that wasn't real. That didn't happen. There was just an absolute knowing that that did not exist. There was not a burglar in my house. I did not break anyone's jaw. There wasn't an intuitive prompt telling me to break someone's jaw. The whole thing just simply did not exist. It was completely unreal. There wasn't any truth to it at all. And that's what this Yoga Vasistha quote is saying about the world. It's saying that the world is equally unreal. That literally we aren't doing anything, just like I literally did not break anyone's jaw. You know, nothing is happening here. There's no truth to any of it. That's the point of this particular quote. What we're going to do now is we're going to move on to 423. And I'm going to give you a link to 423 in my journal. If people are listening on the radio and they want to read along in the journal, what you can do is go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the journal, up on the menu bar, you'll see a step 2. And you can click on step 2 on the menu bar, and then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 423. If you have a bit of trouble using the menu bar at the top, there's also step 1, step 2, and 3 on the right-hand menu on the screen, on the right side of the screen. And you can look under step 2 there and find the same numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 423. And 423 is where we're going to begin. So first I'm going to read 423 from the Supreme Yoga, and this is what it says. This world illusion has arisen because of the movement of thought in the mind. When that ceases, the illusion will cease too, and the mind becomes no mind. This world illusion has arisen because of the movement of thought in the mind. When that ceases, the illusion will cease too, and the mind becomes no mind. All right, let's look at 423 in the journal. Now, this is something that I posted when it originally happened, and there actually were people that had trouble accepting this. So let's look at this a little bit carefully. Let's not rush through it. Why did the dream of burglary arise? Remember the dream I told you about where I found the burglar in my kitchen and I broke his jaw? Why did the dream of burglary arise? Why did I break the jaw of the burglar with great determination? And what am I doing by asking these questions? It could be said simply that the dream arose from nothing. It appeared to be, but without reality. And then it disappeared into nothing, having never truly existed in the first place. Or, the dream could be said to have some meaning, to have some personal meaning about me. And through the idea of meaning, the dream is afforded some sense of reality. which is a statement of direct experience and which is additional mind action. So I'm going to stop here for just a moment. So what was coming to me, obviously, because I'm contemplating the seven steps, was clarity. That's what always comes when I contemplate the seven steps. And the clarity that was coming came from the remembrance of the thought when I woke up from that dream. My very first thought was that that was not real. That didn't happen. And the clarity that is coming is the clarity that that's a perfect statement of truth. That's a perfect statement of truth. That dream was not real. It did not happen. It did not exist. Nothing happened. And then there's nothing else to think about. But our mind, wanting to keep the illusion alive, doesn't accept the nothing happened theory. It doesn't accept the it does not exist theory, even with a nighttime dream. The mind wants to analyze it and find some meaning. The mind wants to analyze the fact that there was a burglar in my house. What does that mean if I'm dreaming about a burglar? The mind wants to analyze the fact that I broke his jaw with great determination. What does that mean if I was absolutely determined to break his jaw until I did? And in fact, the day that I posted number 423 in Facebook, I posted it in a couple of different places, and people were providing their analysis on what the meaning of this dream was and what that says about Regina's unconsciousness, you know, subconscious, what that says about Regina's subconscious. Now, this is what needs to be looked at very carefully. Are you ready? If we are analyzing the dream, and we're saying the dream has meaning, and this is the meaning, Regina, this is what this says about you, aren't we giving meaning to Regina? Aren't we making that personality, that person, somewhat real or meaningful by giving that kind of meaning? The clarity that was coming was it is better to give no meaning to the dream at all, just it wasn't real. I'm gonna keep reading a little bit because this is going to address the next thing I want to say, but I feel like I need to keep reading before I go into that. So tell you what, let me start at the top of 423 and we'll move down. Why did the dream of burglary arise? Why did I break the jaw of the burglar with great determination? And what am I doing by asking these questions? It could be said simply that the dream arose from nothing. It appeared to be, but without reality. And then it disappeared into nothing, having never truly existed in the first place. Or, the dream could be said to have some meaning, to have some personal meaning about me. And through the idea of meaning, the dream is afforded some sense of reality. You know, the dream then says something real, right? Which is a statement of direct experience and which is additional mind action? And I told you that when I woke up, the direct experience was that was not real. Why is there resistance to accepting that the dream is nothing? What wants to make more of it and say it has meaning that is real? Now, what I experienced as this clarity came that the dream was nothing, I experienced what I'm going to call a sense of agitation. A sense of agitation that came from the mind because the mind wanted me to think about the dream more. The mind wanted me to analyze it. The mind wanted me to give it meaning. The mind wanted me to decide what that meant about me. Because if I decide what that meant about me, I make me very real. And then, as I mentioned, when I posted this on Facebook, I found other people doing the same thing. Even though I was very clear in my post that the clarity was that the dream meant nothing and that that was the best way to look at it, had no meaning at all, there were multiple posts from multiple people saying, no, this is what the dream meant. And of course, you know, the funny thing is, the joke is, they didn't all arrive at the same result, the same meaning. You know, so really, the dream only had the meaning they gave it. Right? And each person's meaning was completely illusory. The meanings did not match. The way people analyzed the dream did not come up with the same thing. There wasn't an inherent meaning in the dream. But those people who chose to analyze it came up with meanings, and then they believed their meanings, and they also believed that what they were telling me about me was true and that I needed to listen, even though they weren't saying the same thing. Do you see how illusion works? It's such a perfect example. And this is what Jesus is pointing out to us in the opening lessons of A Course in Miracles, right? That we give everything all the meaning it has for us. And then we believe our own meaning. And in that way, we give illusion the weight of reality. And that's an error. That's a mistake. It is actually much better to say it simply isn't real. It simply doesn't exist. But the mind resists that. Because if we could really stick to it isn't real, it doesn't exist, we'd probably wake up in a nanosecond. So the mind wants us to keep giving meaning, keep giving meaning to everything we experience. This is what it means. So why is there resistance to accepting that the dream is nothing? What wants to make more of it and say it has meaning that is real? If the force of resistance is followed and the dream is analyzed, this again is the clarity continuing. If the force of resistance is followed and the dream is analyzed, some idea about what I am is developed. It may be good or bad, but either way it defines a, in quotes, truth about what I am. And that's what I said happened with the people on Facebook who chose to analyze it. They each felt like they came up with a truth about me, even though they were saying different things. If the force of resistance is not followed, again, the force of resistance was resisting saying the dream had no meaning. The resistance wanted to give it meaning, right? So if this force of resistance is not followed, which means I choose not to give it meaning, and there is no further thought about the dream, there is nothing left of the dream. There is no effect, there is no self-identification, nothing. If all I say is, that was not real, then it has no effects. The only way the dream has an effect is if I say, okay, a burglar in my house, that must mean that I feel insecure. I don't feel safe. Now I have an image. My subconscious feels insecure. My subconscious does not feel safe. And now if I want to, I can start believing that about myself. I can go around telling people, you know, I thought I felt safe. I thought I felt secure. But then I had this dream that there was a burglar in my house. And now I realize I don't really feel safe. I don't really feel secure. You see how I can develop a belief. I can develop a self-identity. I make it up through the meaning that I apply. But if I just say that simply wasn't real, there's no self-identification that comes out of that, no self-definition that comes out of that, no new concepts believed that comes out of that. There's actually no effect at all. One thing we've been looking at through the Seven Steps Journal in the last couple of weeks is that cause and effect are both illusory. This demonstrates how, just using the example of a nighttime dream that I had, the cause of any beliefs I might develop about myself was the dream. But wasn't the dream totally illusory? And then any effects it might have, like the belief that actually I don't feel secure, is also illusory, because that's made-up meaning that I applied to a made-up event. Of course, I could believe it, and it can seem real for me, but believing it and seeming real is not the same thing as true. If I do not see the dream as a cause, if I just see the dream as nothing, not exist, didn't happen, which was the first thought when I awoke, and I don't think about that dream anymore, ever again, then it also has no effects. It doesn't define anything about me. It doesn't add any self-concepts to my list of self-concepts. It's meaningless. So again, if the full force of resistance is not followed and there is no further thought about the dream, there is nothing left of the dream. No effect, no self-identification, nothing. Therefore, which supports the continuation of the dream as reality? No more thought about it, or assumed meaning and continued thought? And again, the dream is going to seem real if I assume it had meaning and I continue to think about it. If I just say it wasn't real and I have no more thought, then it has no effect. And what is intuitively known about the dream? Well, that first thought when I woke up, it wasn't real. It didn't happen. That's what's intuitively known. There was no burglar in my house. I didn't break anybody's jaw. It doesn't have any meaning at all. It's just not real. So what is intuitively known about the dream? That it's reality or nothing? It's nothing. Upon awakening, it was known that the dream was nothing. Continued thought gives it the illusion of meaning and continuance. But it is no more accurate to say, but it is more accurate to say it was nothing and let all thinking about it stop. This decision is reflective of truth. So what this example is showing us is that the seeming reality arises out of the thinking about it, out of the giving meaning, the thinking about it, the believing it, the making decisions about it. And that's what's also true about this illusion that we live as if it's real life. It's our thinking about it that makes it seem to have meaning, makes it seem real. Again, if we go back to the original Yoga Vasistha, I can't always say that very well, Supreme Yoga quote. The Supreme Yoga quote was, "This world illusion has arisen because of the movement of thought in the mind. When that ceases, the illusion will cease too, and the mind becomes no mind." So thinking about it, giving meaning, believing it, making decisions about it, that's the error that needs correction. Why don't we scroll down, and underneath the comment and reply area, you can click on number 424. We'll go there next. And I'm also posting this link to 424 in the room. when I'm reading from my journal's on my screen and I don't see the comments in the room. But now I see the comments in the room, and see, notice how meaning is being given again. And in fact, let me just tell you the meaning that's being given right here. The dream sounds like a thin veil over rage. In the dream, there was no experience of rage. That's what's interesting about it. I wasn't angry at the burglar. I didn't even feel fear in the dream. I just knew there was a burglar in the house. I went into the kitchen and I saw him, and then I had an intuitive prompt that said, "You have to break his jaw." I didn't feel afraid. I didn't feel angry. What I did feel was a thought, "I can't break a jaw. I'm not that strong." I can't break a man's jaw. I felt self-doubt, if anything. And then the intuitive prompt said, you can because you have to. This is something you have to do. Like this was an assignment I had. And so I went over and with great determination, but the great determination was not projected onto the man. The great determination was to see that I could do what I had to do, that I had more inner strength than I thought. And so with great determination, I broke the jaw. So there was no sense of rage. There was no fear in the dream. Right? None. But when people analyze the dream, they're using their thinking mind to assume what it meant. They give meaning. And then they apply that meaning and they say, this is true about you. And they don't realize the whole thing is made up. And again, this is only a small nano example. A small nano example of what we do constantly and why this illusion of a world seems to be. We make all kinds of decisions about who people are, about what circumstances mean. And you know what else? Your decisions and my decisions don't agree. You know, we can take, you know, Dove, hopefully Dove doesn't mind me talking about him for a moment. He's a perfect example because he's a personality that so many of us, probably everyone in this room to some degree knows. The wide variety of the ways that people see Dove are incredible. I have heard people describing Dove as an angel from heaven. I've heard people describe Dove as having intuition that is always perfect. I've heard people say, you know, I always listen to Dove. He's just right on all the time. And then I've heard other people describe Dove as the devil, practically, you know, this angry, rageful man who comes in here and just, you know, tries to control everyone. You know, why do we have such varying ideas about what Dove is? The answer is simple, because we are giving meaning to what we see, we're making decisions about what we see, and then we're believing it. Whether he's the angel or whether he's the devil, we're making it up. What we're not doing is saying, this does not exist. It is not real. We don't do that. And that's the meaning of this quote. It's really trying to teach us something, that the illusion continues because we continue to believe our own thoughts. And that if we want to wake up, which is what we say we want, then what we need to do is begin to take back that belief. Begin to take back that meaning. But Jesus tells us in A Course in Miracles is that this is all meaningless. That it, the only meaning it has is the meaning we give it, right? That's the teaching that's here. So we want to, and as I said, I experience strong resistance, and so I can understand if someone else is experiencing resistance too and wants to say, no, that dream meant something. I understand, but that's the mind. That's the mind wanting us to give it meaning so that we can continue the believing in the personality and the world and everything that's not true. And what we really want to do is not follow that force that is calling us to give meaning. We want to step back and be willing to not give meaning. That's the challenge. Not give meaning. All right, let me give you the link to 424. I think that's what I was about to do when I noticed the comments in the room. Like I said, I don't usually see them when I'm talking because my journal is in front of the screen, and so that's all I see. Another person, I won't mention names, another person is sharing another definition of the dream, but she's joking. She says, I thought that you broke his jaw so he couldn't talk to you. You broke his jaw so that he couldn't eat or be nourished. The burglar is the ego. And I don't even remember what all of the definitions were that were in Facebook, but they varied from seeing me as having a lot of rage or a lot of fear to seeing me overcoming the ego. Those are the types of interpretations we saw. Some people were saying, you know, this means that you're done with the ego. You're completely done with him. You know, and so see how wide the variations were. Either I'm completely done with the ego, or I still have a lot of hidden rage and fear that I'm not looking at. Interpretations. They're all interpretations, and they vary so extensively. But again, the point is, this is what we all do all the time. Dove is quoting, we need to be responsible for what we see. Yeah, the responsibility for sight section that Len and I are currently teaching right now on Thursdays in A Course in Miracles. But you know, it's so funny because I know me and us. I know that we can sit here and we could maybe even reach a moment of clarity that we are constantly interpreting and constantly giving meaning and believing our own meaning and therefore making our own dream. And we can have a moment of clarity, that's what's happening. And then when this teaching is done and we walk away from the computer and we face something, by habit we're going to just start doing it again. We'll see somebody doing something and we'll assume this was their intention. This is why they did it. This is what it means. And we're going to believe that about them, believe that about our relationship. So because that's our tendency, I think it's okay if we just sit here for a second. Don't rush past this. Sit here a little longer and realize we're walking around making up shit and believing our own shit. That's what responsibility for sight is about. We walk around making up shit and believing our own shit. I believe what I believe about Dove, you believe what you believe about Dove, and we all do it all the time. That's the point here. And we say we want to wake up. Then we need to wake up to this. We need to wake up to this. Stop believing ourselves. Opinions, Diana has written in the room. It's there to cover truth. All right, I did give you the link to 424, but Teddy popped in. I don't know if he wants to join us, but if he does, there's the link to 424. I'm going to start by reading 424 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. The unreal alone dies. And it is the unreal that is born again, apparently in another body. I've talked before in this room about how reincarnation is not a truth. You know, I've talked before in this room about how, you know, as we're learning what's real and what's unreal, sometimes we get confused on the criteria. And we think that, you know, non-spiritual things are unreal. But if it's a spiritual story, suddenly we think it's real, like the story of reincarnation. And I want to use another word, not just story, because it may be more than a story. It may be an experience within the dream. Just like now, right this second, I have the experience of being Regina Dawn Akers. That seems real, but it's not, right? Reincarnation falls into the same bucket. It seems real, but it's not. If it seems real, but it's not, then it's not a truth. It's part of the illusion. So reincarnation is part of the illusion. It doesn't mean the experience doesn't happen. It doesn't mean you might not, you know, you might remember previous lifetimes, and you say, but Regina, I remember this lifetime and this lifetime and this lifetime. Well, that's fine, but that doesn't make it real, right? Teddy's writing, I once had a full memory of reincarnation being my idea and realizing it was actually a useless one, but it was too late. Well, if we listen to this quote again, 424 from the Supreme Yoga, notice what dies and what is born again in a body. Are you ready? The unreal alone dies, and it is the unreal that is born again, apparently in another body. The unreal, right? Okay, so let's go ahead and look at the journal, number 424. A dream ends. The dream ends because it is not reality. Thought about it gives it a sense of reality, and in that way its effects may continue. But without thought, there are no effects to be continued. Now, I'll tell you that when I was writing this, I was still thinking about the burglary dream. All right? So when I said a dream ends, that's what I'm referring to, are nighttime dreams like the burglary dream. A dream ends. It ends because it's not real. That's why a nighttime dream comes to an end. It is not real. If I continue to think about it, if I continue to give it meaning, if I believe that I have an inner rage or an inner insecurity or fear, or if I believe that I have finished with the ego, I've overcome the ego, because that's my interpretation of the dream. If I believe that, then it's going to continue to have some seeming effects in the form of self-concept, right? Who I think I am. Because thought about it gives it a sense of reality. And in that way, the effects of that temporary dream continue. But if I don't think about it, if when I wake up, I accept that idea, oh, that wasn't real, and I accept it fully, well, then there's no effects from the dream. Okay, the second paragraph. The characteristics of a dream then, all right? The characteristics of a dream then are that it has a beginning and an end, and that thought is needed for it to have effects. That's the characteristics of a dream. Again, right, this moment, we're talking about a nighttime dream. But you might be able to see that this analogy is going to go beyond a nighttime dream. The characteristics of a dream, then, are that it has a beginning and an end, and thought is needed for it to have effects. All right. Look at the personality that seemed to awaken from the nighttime dream. In my case, that would be Regina. When I woke up from the dream and I had the thought that was not real, in that moment, what I woke up into, was the personality of Regina. Right? So let's look at that personality, the one that seemed to awaken from the nighttime dream. Did this personality that we call Regina have a beginning? And the answer is yes, this personality had a beginning. Will this personality end? And the answer is yes. Even if you believe in reincarnation, it's not the personality that reincarnates, because in each lifetime, you are a different personality. The personality has an ending. Does this personality, and this is a very good question, this next question coming up, very good, meaning it helps us go deep into realization. Does this personality, Regina, have effects on anyone, including the self, Regina, without thought? So let's take someone who just walked past me on the road, maybe glanced at me for a moment, but made no decisions about what they saw when their eyes landed on this body. They made no decisions, no judgments, nothing. Their eyes looked and then they went on, and they never gave what they saw another thought, ever, for as long as they lived. Does Regina have any effect on them? She has no effect. No effect whatsoever. Why? Because there was no thought. No decision was made. No judgment was made. There is no effect on that person. What if we have another person that, you know, let's say comes into Pal Talk and hears me talking today and does not like what I say, does not like the way I sound, makes lots of judgments, leaves the room, and then continues to think about those judgments, even if they never come into the room and hear me again. And you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, you know, somebody may say something to this person like, wow, I heard Regina last night, and she was really clear, and this person feels this little stab inside them because they really, really don't like Regina. They disagree with everything she says, and it bothers them immensely when somebody else says she was so clear. even though they never come into contact with me again. Every time someone else mentions my name, they feel that little stab of judgment. They feel that grievance. What's the only difference? Thought, thinking, meaning, decisions. If someone came into the room, was listening to me talk and really didn't like it, didn't feel it, and left, but somehow never gave it another thought, they would have no effects. Just like the person passing me on the street, no effects. The only way this personality of Regina has effect on anyone is if they are thinking about it, if they're making decisions, giving meaning. And of course, that's true for everything. As I mentioned, I think it was last night or the night before, or both, my brain is not functioning well right now. And some people say, you know, one of the meanings that's given to that is menopause. That's not the only meaning I've heard, by the way. So people have different ideas about why my brain isn't working well. But it isn't, compared to the brain that I used to have, which was a very sharp, very clear brain. That's not what I experience now. It's not sharp. It's not clear. The simplest, you know, things that maybe just happened earlier today, I don't even remember. I have no memory of something that happened this morning, for example. Just none. And the reason I know that sometimes things happen that I don't remember is because Jasmine or Danielle will remember it. Jasmine or Danielle will give it some kind of meaning and will later want to talk to me about it. You know, they'll say, we'll want to say, well, you remember when you said this, or you remember when you did that? Was it because of blah, blah, blah? I'm like, I don't remember. And I don't remember. I don't remember that event at all. It doesn't exist for me. Now, as I mentioned, one meaning that has been given to the fact that my brain is changing is menopause, and maybe that's true. Another meaning that has been given by a few people is that I really have learned not to think about things. I'm there in the moment, and then I walk away and I don't continue to think about it. And that's another possible theory, because if I walk away and I don't continue to think about it, in effect, it disappears from me. It has no effect. If I walk away and I also think about it, I also have a judgment, I also gave it meaning, and I'm walking away thinking, I wonder what Jasmine or Danielle meant by that. I wonder why Jasmine or Danielle reacted that way. Then in the afternoon when they say, hey, remember this morning? I go, yeah, I remember. Sure, I remember. Why did you respond that way? I'm not holding on to things. I'm not thinking about them. And so they disappear. Nothing can have an effect on us unless we think about it. No person, no event. So again, 424 near the bottom says, does this personality have effects on anyone, including self, without thought? No. Only thought about the personality seems to create effect. And here's the last question. Now remember, earlier in the 424 journaling, we saw the characteristics of a dream as having a beginning, an ending, and there needs to be thought about it in order for it to have effects. You know, a dream that you don't remember has no effects on you. If you wake up and somebody says, what did you dream about last night? You say, I don't know, I don't remember. That does not affect your self-concept. It has no effects because you don't remember, right? So a dream has a beginning, an end, and there needs to be thought in order for it to have any effects. Without thought, there are no effects. Okay, let's look at the personality of Regina. What I seem to wake up into when I woke up from the burglary dream. Does Regina have a beginning? Yes. Does Regina have an end? Yes. Does Regina have effects on anyone without thought? No. If people are not thinking about Regina, Regina has no effect on them. Does the personality then have the same characteristics as a dream? And the answer, yes. Personality has the exact same characteristics of a dream. It has a beginning, an ending, and it can cause no effect directly. It has no effect. It has no effect because it does not exist. Let's go on to 425. You can scroll down below the comment and reply area and click on 425. I'm also going to give you the link in the room. I'm going to read 425 from the Seven Steps to Awakening, which is actually quoting the Supreme Yoga. Actually, I'm not. I'm going to in a minute, but a thought just popped into my mind, and I'm going to follow that thought. A week ago last night, so a week ago Sunday, let me go ahead and just look at the calendar and get that date. That would have been the November 25th Seven Steps teaching. In the November 25th Seven Steps teaching, I asked a question in the journal. The inner prompting that's coming through the Seven Steps work was asking me to determine the difference between what is real and what is not real. But it had already taught me that something that is unreal cannot determine the difference between what is real or what is unreal. And so when I was asked to determine the difference between what is real and what is unreal, I, still thinking that, I guess thinking the mind, I said, can I do that? Can the mind do that? Can the mind determine the difference between what is real or what is unreal? Well, that question was never answered immediately, so that question was on the table. That question stayed on the table for the remainder of Sunday night's teaching. It was still on the table for last Monday's teaching. Last night, in last night's teaching, that question was answered, but I forgot to go back and make the connection, and it just now popped in my mind about that, so I'm going to make the connection now. In last night's teaching, the December 2nd Seven Steps teaching, we were looking at a journal entry which talked about the grandfather knowing, this intuition. And what we were able to see when we were looking at this was we saw that the mind could not determine if the I, the self before mind, had a beginning or not. Mind could not determine that. Which means mind is not real and cannot verify reality. But we saw that the intuition that seems to be inherent in the I, or the self, did know that mind had a beginning. That means that intuition, which is inherent in the self, is real. And that intuition was found to be within us. So what that means is there is something in us. Last night it was called grandfather knowing, but that was just a temporary nickname because it doesn't have a name. But there is something in us, a knowledge, an intuition, an intelligence in us that is prior to mind. It has nothing to do with thinking. But it does know the difference between what is real and what is unreal. So when we are asked to go through this process of deep inquiry and determine what's real or what's not real, the mind can't do that. The mind would fail. but we can because we're not the mind. So that was the answer to the question that was put on the table on November 25th. All right, now, now I will read number 425 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Wherever the world is seen, that is but an illusory world appearance. This illusion, and therefore bondage, is sustained by psychological conditioning. Such conditioning is bondage, and its abandonment is freedom. All right, I'll just read that one more time, and then we'll look at the journal. Wherever the world is seen, that is but an illusory world appearance. This illusion, and therefore bondage, is sustained by psychological conditioning. Such conditioning is bondage, and its abandonment is freedom. All right, so let's look at number 425 in the journal. What makes the world? The seeing-believing loop, especially the seeing-believing of background thought processes. Now again, this journal is a continuing inquiry, and you know, those of you who happen to listen to all of the teachings probably understand what is being referred to here as the seeing-believing loop and the background thought processes. But those of you who maybe have not heard me teach from Seven Steps or have not heard me teach regularly may not know what that's referring to. So the seeing-believing loop is a loop that you've heard me comment on many, many times. The seeing-believing loop is that loop that starts with what I think, I perceive. Whatever I perceive, I also experience. And whatever I experience, I continue to think about. And that's where the loop comes in. I think it, I perceive it, I experience it, and I think it. And then I perceive it, and then I experience it, and so I think it. I think about it, and then I perceive it, and then it's a loop. It just keeps going, right? Think, perceive, experience. Think, perceive, experience. Now, within that loop, there are some background thought processes. By background thought processes, we mean thoughts that we don't even notice we're thinking. You know, like if I have a grievance against someone, I may notice that I'm thinking, you know, about this person and I think the last example I used was what a bully she is, so I'll stick with that. You know, I have this person in my life who's a bully to me, or feels like a bully to me. That's what I perceive, that's what I experience, and so that's what I think about, is what a bully she is, right? That's a conscious thought. I might not be noticing that it's an ego thought, but it's still a conscious thought. I'm consciously walking around thinking about this person who's a bully. A background thought process isn't conscious. The background thought processes are things like, I am a body. You know, we don't walk around thinking, I am a body, I am a body, I am a body. You know, we don't have these thoughts. But it's there. And in fact, it's even reinforced by the idea of a bully, you know, who is trying to bully me into things that I don't want to do, right? The I'm a body is inherent in that. Other thoughts that we may not walk, we do walk around and think sometimes consciously, but not all the times consciously, are thoughts like, it's mine. But not just it's mine, but what is mine has more value to me. But this is a believed thought. That's why when your father dies, I may say, oh, I'm so sorry, but I don't feel anything. When my father dies, I may suffer. Because I have this thought that what is mine is more valuable to me. Right, I believe that. And so the suffering is different, right? I suffer more when my father dies, may not experience anything, any suffering at all when your father dies, except possibly uncomfortableness, not knowing what to say to you. You know? It's See, it's a background thought. What is mine is more valuable to me. So, back to 425. What makes the world? The seeing-believing loop that I just talked about, especially the seeing-believing loop of those background thought processes, like I am a body, this is my world, what is mine is more important to me than what is not mine. These thoughts really create the world. So here comes the inquiry again. Do these background thought processes exist in the personality? This is the inquiry. And yes, in fact, to the personality, they are seen as facts. When we start rising above the personality's thought system into wisdom, we might start to realize these background thoughts are not facts. But if we are totally in the personality's thought process, if we haven't started to listen to wisdom at all, well, to me, it's a fact that I'm a body. It's a fact that what's important to me has more value. I mean, what is mine has more value to me than what is not mine. It's a fact that this is my world. So to the personality, if wisdom has not been engaged, if the personality's thought processes are not being undone by wisdom, if we're just looking at the personality's thought processes without any correction, to the personality, these background thought processes are facts. That's how they're perceived. So the next part of 425. What is the dreamer of the dream then? What is the dreamer of the dream? Is the thought, is the personality, believing the thoughts and therefore creating the dream? Or is the personality a part of the dream? Some kind of output that exists just because of the spinning of this loop. You know, often here in this room we say things like, that is my projection. I believe that, and so I see it. This is my world that I'm seeing. And we're attempting to take responsibility for sight, like A Course in Miracles teaches. We're seeing ourselves as the dreamer of the dream, the personality. But is it true that the personality is the dreamer of the dream? Or is it, or as we awaken, do we come to see that the personality is unreal and a part of the dream? And if the personality is unreal and a part of the dream, can it also be the dreamer of the dream? What is the dreamer of the dream is the question. And the answer is, there is no dreamer. The personality is a dream. Its thought processes make the dream world, but there is no actual dreamer that can be found. Because what happens is, even though I, Regina, may be the one who seems to believe in rejection, seems to believe in betrayal, and so I see these things in the world, right? When this is really undone, there's no betrayal or rejection, but there's also no Regina, and there's also no world. I mentioned to you all once that I had a, usually when I dream, in my dreams, my nighttime dreams, I'm still Regina. But I had a dream in the last year where I wasn't Regina. In my dream, I was a teenage boy, probably around 14 or 15 years old. I want to say more 14, but I'm not sure. I was a teenage boy. And I don't remember that dream real well now. I'm further away from it, and I don't remember it. I think I recalled it a little better in a previous recording. But what I remember about the dream is that this teenage boy, was in some kind of trouble with my friends. And I wanted to get out of trouble. I didn't want to be in trouble with the police and all of that. So I wanted to get out of trouble. I wanted to be perceived as innocent. I don't even remember now whether I did it or didn't do it, or I don't even remember if I knew that in the dream. But the idea of the dream was I, this boy, had to get myself out of this trouble. I needed to be out of trouble. Well, in the dream, if you had come up to me as a course teacher and you had said to me, all right, here's what's happening. This trouble that you are perceiving yourself in is because of your beliefs. And these are the beliefs that you have that is causing this trouble. I might have listened to you in the dream. And I might have began to practice spiritually as you were teaching me. Right? And I might have even been able to watch in the dream, and I might even have been able to see that I was beginning to be perceived as innocent instead of guilty as I worked on my own mind. And I might have said, wow, this is really cool. You know, look how the dream is changing as I'm working on my own mind. But do you know what happened when I woke up from that dream? There was no little boy. There was no little boy. There was no, the whole thing was made up. So as the little boy's mind healed and people began to see him as innocent, that was as unreal as when people were seeing him as guilty. There was no little boy. That's what this is saying. You know, although on the one hand, I'm not saying that we should stop looking at our minds. I think that we should. But you know, A Course in Miracles tells us that if we look at our minds and if we allow the healings of our minds, the effect of that is what it calls the real world. The dream changes, right? We see innocence. But what does it say about the real world? Does it call the real world reality? It doesn't. A Course in Miracles says the real world is still a dream. It's still a dream. Just like if that boy in my dream had changed his mind and people began to see him naturally as innocent, that would have been a happier dream, but still a dream, because I still was not a 14-year-old boy. I've never been a 14-year-old boy, at least not in this quote lifetime. That was completely unreal. The real world is as unreal as the ego world. It's happier. It's more peaceful. And somehow when we're happier and more peaceful, we're also more ready for awakening into reality. At least that's what the Course says. And I trust it. But the I, the personality who thinks I'm projecting a dream, a bad dream, and so I need to heal my mind so that I can project a happier dream, that I, that personality, isn't real. It doesn't actually exist. So although it can be helpful to see the world as my projection, it's not an ultimate truth. Because I, the one who thinks the world is my projection, I don't exist. So what is the dreamer of the dream then? There is no dreamer. The personality is a dream. Its thought processes make the dream world, but there is no actual dreamer that can be found. And you know, in this inquiry, I saw that. When I went back looking to find who is the dreamer of the dream, I couldn't find the dreamer of the dream. Like you can find the personality. You can find that. And that's why we stop there and we say, I'm dreaming this, because it's the only thing we can find. You can't find something other than the personality. If you look for a dreamer other than the personality, you can't find it. And yet you know the personality is unreal too. So you are unable in an inquiry to find the dreamer of the dream. Now, Ramana Maharshi taught this. I never understood it until I experienced it myself. But Ramana Maharshi taught that if you practice the inquiry, who am I, who am I, who am I, you'll find there's nothing there. You can't find the dreamer of the dream. This is what he taught. And he taught by realizing that you couldn't find anything, you would awaken. Well, that's what I experienced in this inquiry that we're looking at 4:25. I experienced that inner looking. And I found there was no dreamer that could be found. Not like the personality can be found. It can't be found. What is the dreamer of the dream then? Before this next sentence was written, there is no dreamer. I did that inner looking. And I came back and I said, there is no dreamer. There's nothing you can identify and say, that's the dreamer. The personality who thinks it's the dreamer is a dream. Its thought processes seem to make the dream world, and yet at the same time, there's no actual dreamer that could be found because the personality itself is a part of the dream. This means when the personality dies, not a bodily death, but a belief in its existence death, the illusion dies too. Because the illusion cannot exist without the illusory personal self. Now remember, what we've been looking at for the last 2 weeks, if you've been watching, is we've been looking at cause and effect are illusory. So what we're saying here is the personality seems to be the cause of the dream. If Regina believes in rejection, she perceives rejection. If she doesn't believe in rejection, she doesn't perceive rejection. There's a seeming cause and effect. But that's all illusory. Because there is no Regina. There is no world. It's not real. Just like there was no 14-year-old boy that was in trouble, that needed to get out of trouble in my dream. And when I woke up, it all ceased to exist. You know, sometimes you hear mainly Advaita Vedanta or Hindu masters, you know, that culture. Sometimes you hear them say that the true self is beyond guilt and innocence. You see, in the dream, the 14-year-old boy thought people saw him as guilty. If he had been taught to work on his own thoughts, the dream may have continued that he worked on his own thoughts, and the effect was people now saw him as innocent. But when I woke up, there was no little boy that could be guilty or innocent. The true self was completely beyond both. So there cannot be a world without a personality, because the personality's thoughts are the cause of the world, but the personality itself is not real. And so when that thought, this is called the I thought or the ego, when the I thought or the ego is undone and the belief in the personality itself dies, the whole thing does not exist. The dreamer does not exist because that was the illusory personality. The dream does not exist. The whole thing disappears. It's not anything that we can intellectually wrap our heads around. At least I can't. And yet somehow it's understood. At least for me. So the undoing of the ego, which is the undoing of the belief in the personality, or the undoing of the I thought, is also the undoing of the world. This means when the personality dies, not a bodily death, because if a bodily death comes first and the belief in the personality still exists, that's when the experience of reincarnation happens, right? This is why we hear you have to die before you die. So when the personality dies, not a bodily death, but a belief in its existence death, the death of the ego, then the illusion dies too, because that illusion is caused by the personality's background beliefs. And without a personality to have background beliefs, you cannot have a world. So when the personality dies, a belief in its existence death, the illusion dies too, because the illusion cannot exist without the illusory personal self. All right, let's scroll down and look at number 426. Again, you can click on 426 underneath the comment and reply area. And here's a link in the room as well. Teddy has just typed in, the St. Paul Daily Journal is called the I Die Daily Journal. Oh, Melissa says she loves these lessons in the 420s. Does that mean you're familiar with them, Melissa? Or are you just loving them today? No, you're not familiar with them, okay. Just today, yeah, because I hadn't seen you around before. Well, they are very good, Melissa. I agree with you. They're very deep and yet very clear, you know, because we can see, at least I can see what's being taught here, even though it can't be understood at another level. Okay, first I'm going to read number 426 from the Seven Steps. Again, this is coming from the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha. Because the world is, in fact, only an appearance, it is in reality emptiness, void, and unreal. Because the world is, in fact, only an appearance, it is in reality emptiness, void, unreal. And, you know, sometimes you hear masters say even emptiness is a poor description. You know, how can something that does not exist be empty? You know, if you think of my nighttime dream, either the burglary dream or the 14-year-old boy dream, either one, when it did not exist, it's even beyond emptiness and fullness because it isn't at all, right? So all of these words are pointers merely, which is why we can't intellectually study the words of any master or intellectually study the words of any scripture and understand, because all the words are just poor pointers. We have to go into the contemplation and the inner looking ourself in order to see. We can't learn it. Again, 426 says, because the world is in fact only an appearance, it is in reality emptiness, void, and unreal. So let's look at number 426 in the journal. Is it true that the world is unreal? Is there any observable fact that indicates this may be the case? Now again, for those of you who are going through all of the seven steps with me, you know that I have kind of sworn, taken an oath, encouraged by the seven steps work itself, not to replace beliefs with belief. And that's often a mistake we make on the spiritual path, that first we believe the world is real, and then we read in A Course in Miracles or some other spiritual book, or we hear from some spiritual master that the world is not real, and then we believe that. But often, almost always, without any kind of an experience that is a legitimate seeing that the world is not real. There's no legitimate seeing that's occurring. We're just replacing one belief with another belief. And what step one was really emphasizing in the seven steps is that's not awakening. The intellectual replacing of one belief with another belief is not awakening. In fact, that's nothing. It doesn't do a thing. It's what it creates what we call a spiritual ego. It's still the same old ego, but now it's dressed up in spiritual clothes with spiritual terms and spiritual beliefs. But no actual undoing has occurred. No actual new seeing has occurred. No real vision is in place. So my promise or my oath to myself as I did the seven steps is that I will not do that. Even as the masters that are quoted in the seven steps repeatedly say, the world is not real, the world is not real, I will not accept that as a belief. I have to see for myself. I have to have the direct experience of my own inherent knowledge. I'm not going to believe it just because a master says it. That's the promise I've made to myself. So, 426 says that the world, again from Yoga Vasistha, says the world is only an appearance. But I'm promised not to adopt that as a belief. So that's what opens up this inquiry that we see in the journal at 426. Is it true, I ask, that the world is unreal? Is there any observable fact that indicates that this may be the case? And then that deep inner looking starts. And after the deep inner looking occurred, I wrote, yes. Yes to the question, is there any observable fact that indicates the world may not be real? Yes. If I is split off from mind and body as self, it is seen that I is not affected by anything perceivable. This means I is not affected by the world. Now again, when I am in this inquiry process, I go into a very deep seeing. And every inquiry is connected to the previous inquiry. No inquiry can be taken on its own, as alone, right? But what we just saw through looking at the idea of first a dream, and then looking at the personality and noticing the personality has the same characteristics of a dream, what we saw was that the personality itself is a dream. We've seen through the last few weeks that cause and effect are illusory. It's not just the effect that's illusory, the cause itself is illusory. The apparent cause is not real. The personality is not real. There's no true dreamer of the dream. It's not real. And yet at the same time, what we've seen is something that is real. Something that's always here, even in this seeming experience of a dream. Something that usually is totally ignored. But if we start paying attention to it, we notice that it's always present, always consistent, completely changeless. It's very subtle, and yet it cannot be separated from what I am. We talked about this a lot last night. I can separate my attention from what I am because I can notice that my attention has strayed into mind wandering. I can notice that. I can see that. And then I can choose to bring my attention out of mind wandering and place my attention in a place that I perceive as more helpful to awakening, like with a mantra or even in awareness, watching awareness. So if I can move my attention, if I can notice it in movement, then I'm separate from the attention. I can move it around just like I can move this cup around, right? But this presence or this awareness, it's always, always, always there in this very subtle way without ever being affected. It's not affected by any mood. It never changes. It's not affected by health or illness of the body. It's not affected as I grow more mature, seemingly wiser. It's the same. It's the same awareness that I had as a 3-year-old that I have now. It's never, ever, ever been affected. So while we've seen there's something that's completely illusory, the personality, the seeming dreamer of the dream and the dream itself, completely illusory, at the same time we've seen there's something that's very real, very consistent, not affected by the dream. So if there is something that is very real, that can be known right now, that is not all affected by anything, that ability to see the difference between the two, the apparent two, that tells us which is real and which is not real. That is an observable fact that indicates, at the very least, that the world may indeed not be real. Because it doesn't matter what the world does to this body. It doesn't matter how much the world seems to affect this personality when really the personality is seeming to affect the world. It doesn't matter how much that seeing, believing loop between the illusory personality and the illusory world goes and goes and goes. This I awareness, this which cannot be separated, is not affected by any of it. And that is observable right now. I can see that. So that indicates there is something real and very clearly a lot of something unreal. So if I is split off from mind and body as self, if I separate the two and look, it is seen that I is not affected by anything perceivable. This means I is not affected by the world. And that is an observable fact that indicates that the world may indeed not be real, since it has no effect on what I am. If I is my real self, and I know it is, because I cannot separate what I am from I, then I must be real because I know I exist. Or said another way, there is existence here. And that fact indicates I is real. This awareness that never changes, the same when I was 3 as today. That's got to be real. That exists. Even illusion couldn't happen without the foundation of existence. There would be nothing to think it experienced it. Not that I really thinks it experiences it. Even I is before thinking. Right? And Melissa's asking, as soon as we name it, aren't we back in the persona? I think that if in the journal, the name changes constantly, and I think that's one reason, is so that we don't actually name it, but it has to be in a journal, it has to be described in words, but the name changes constantly, so there's not a consistent name throughout the journal, and I think that's why, Melissa. So it can stay undefined, yeah, so you don't attach. So right now, I is being used, but that's not consistent through the whole journal. Objects, this is the last paragraph of 426. Objects cannot be confirmed to exist because they are only perceived. Now, this is going way back in the journal to where direct experience was basically defined as that which is directly known. I'm trying to figure out how to say this because it was more an inner clarity than a, you know, it wasn't a teaching in words. And so sometimes when you take an inner clarity and you try to put it back into words, it mucks it up. But like this cup that I'm moving around, I actually experience this cup. In fact, I can hold it and it's cool. But I experience that coolness through the senses of the body. If there wasn't a body to touch the cup, I wouldn't know it was cool. So the cup is not directly experienced. It's experienced through the body. A direct experience is an experience that needs no mediator. You don't need a body to experience it. You don't need a thought to experience it. You know, you can only experience hate through a hateful thought. If I don't have the thought, you know, I hate the cold, I don't experience the emotion of hate, even if the body feels cold. I may still experience cold because I have the mediator of the body, but I don't experience a negative emotion about feeling that cold if I don't have the thought. So the feeling of hating something, being frustrated with something, impatient, rejected, unworthy, all of those emotional experiences are not direct experiences because they cannot be experienced without the mediator of thought. So I can't experience things like a cup without the mediator of the body. I can't experience emotions like hate without the mediator of thought. A direct experience is something that requires no mediator. For example, the knowledge that existence is present here, that I exist. I could have third stage Alzheimer's, fourth stage Alzheimer's, and I might not even know the words I exist. But yet that knowledge, without even the ability to formulate it into language, is still there. That's a direct experience. No mediator required. And through the seven steps, what is taught and what is seen through inquiry is that you can only know it is real if it's directly experienced without a mediator. And in fact, the more mediators there are, for example, if we require both thought and body to feel cold and hate it, the more mediators there are, the less validity there is that it's real. Too many layers of interpretation. But if it's directly experienced without a mediator, then you know it's real. Like the idea that the realization, again, you can't say it in words, the knowledge that you exist, you know that's real. So objects cannot be confirmed to exist because they are only perceived, you know, through mediators. They are not known as intimate beingness, as self-existence. In addition, if an object changes, with no effect on self-beingness, when self-beingness is confirmed through direct experience to be real, then there is no evidence that the object has reality. So if I hit myself in the head with this very heavy magnifying glass, and it cuts my head, and it bleeds, and I feel pain, and maybe I even have the thought that I'm stupid, why did I do such a thing, right? All this stuff is going on. But then if I'm able to tune in and really look, really, really look, I notice that there's an awareness, a core self, that is still unaffected, still unchanged. And I also notice that that core self is the only thing that is experienced without mediation. Thoughts are interpreting the event with the magnifying glass. The body, you know, what felt the pain, not this awareness. So the only thing that is happening for me without interpretation is the self. Therefore, that's the only thing that can be confirmed to be real. The rest of it is questionable at best. And with that, I think I'm out of time. So I'm going to turn off the mic, and thanks for hanging out with me, you guys. Bye.